Back to you. All right, keeping the show on the road, Dr. Jess Sparrow is a writer, editor and broadcaster, a former editor of Overland Literary Journal. He now works at the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. His books include Crime Against Nature, Capitalism and Global Heating, Provocations, New and Selected Writing, and the forthcoming 12 Rules for Strife, a collaboration with artist Sam Warman. Welcome, Jess Sparrow.
Thanks for that, Alex. This book has had more launches than NASA. I'm pleased to say that I was attending the Canberra event, and I know that there are some people here who are also at that event, so I'll try not to repeat myself, and hopefully I won't keep you too long. But since then, I've had the opportunity to actually read the book at... which I hadn't done before, and can I say it's a cracker. It's a book that begins by talking about convicts and rum and ends by talking about fascists and beer, and thus covers more or less the entirety of Australian culture. But I was particularly glad when I was reading it to look at Alex's accounts of early Australian socialism. A chapter in which he talks about the visit of the great English socialist Tom Mann to Australia. When Mann was travelling around the country, whipping up great enthusiasm, recruiting people to the Victorian Socialist Party, his enemies spread a story that Mann had been charged in England with selling adulterated beer in the pub that he owned. And I like that story because you could not get a more perfect image of sort of proletarian perfidy than selling watered down beer to workers. And actually, in fact, this is a charge with a long history. If you look at the Code of Hammurabi, 1700 BC, which the Babylonians laid out their system of law and justice, one of the offences that they list is in fact pertaining to tavern keepers who cheat customers out of the beer that they buy. In the Code of Hammurabi, the penalty for selling adulterated beer is in fact death. Mind you, in the Code of Hammurabi, the penalty for just about everything is death. But it also goes to how seriously the ancients took their beer. I don't know if anyone's read the Epic of Gilgamesh, but at one point in that Sumerian story, one of the Sumerian gods tries to tell Gilgamesh that he should not be searching for the secret of eternal life, but in fact should satisfy himself with mortal pleasures. One of the mortal pleasures that the gods tell him that he should satisfy himself with is drinking beer. And again, it's such a perfect image. You can imagine Gilgamesh saying, yeah, I'm going to go out there and find the secret of eternal life. And someone saying, nah, mate, stay home, have a beer instead. And it also goes to the importance of alcohol in the ancient world. In fact, some anthropologists say that in the Fertile Crescent, the transition from hunter-gatherer societies to agriculture was inspired not by a desire to produce food, but by a desire to brew beer, with the first crops being barley and hops and so on and so forth. And the reason why I mention that is it goes to one of the major themes of the book. This eternal question for the left: is alcohol progressive or is alcohol reactionary? Because, you know, from a sort of Marxist perspective, you can think about that transition from hunter-gatherer society, agriculture. You say, well, okay, expanding the productive forces, this is good, leading to the formation of classes in the state, this is bad. And again, when you think about alcohol, the same problem comes up. The other example that came to my mind was to do with British sailors. I'm sure you've probably heard the argument that the British sailing vessels were sort of precursors to the modern factory, these tremendously complicated machines. Sailors were paid wages, the early wage labourers. They're on sea, they're sailing across the Atlantic for months at a time, and intense class conflicts were fought between the officers and the men. Those class conflicts were again and again mediated through alcohol. So in the 17th century, it became established that every seaman would be allowed a certain allocation of alcohol. And when I say allowed a certain allocation of alcohol, I mean that before 12, the entire ship's company would line up, 10 o'clock or 11 in the morning, and everybody on the ship would be given half an imperial pint of rum. So that's essentially about half a bottle of modern spirit. So I worked it out about 9 standard drinks, 10 o'clock in the morning, and then up the rigging in an Atlantic gale to sail the ship for the rest of the day. So, you know, the British Admiralty eventually realised this was perhaps suboptimal to have their ships crewed by basically functional alcoholics. But, you know, as late as the 19th century, the thirst of the British seamen was so well known that when at the Battle of Trafalgar, when Nelson was killed, his colleagues decided they would bring him back to England for a public funeral. And in order to facilitate that, they would put him in a barrel and fill the barrel up with brandy so that his body would be in good condition to be displayed. And a persistent rumour circulated that by the time the ship had got back to England, the sailors had bored a hole in the barrel and drunk all of the brandy. So again, I put it to you, we can understand this in two ways: as an act of class struggle in which these sailors had shown their antipathy to the ruling class on the ship by essentially sucking them dry. Or alternatively, we can understand this as an illustration of how much alcohol had degraded the sailors that they were prepared to drink the brandy in which Admiral Nelson had been pickled. Now, I don't propose to settle that question for you, but I would suggest if you want to think about the role of alcohol in human history, then this book is a tremendous resource with which to start. I said in the Canberra launch that we can think about Henry Lawson's famous passage about how beer is something that makes you feel how you should feel when you don't have beer. And we can interpret that to say that beer is in some ways a source of conviviality, a source of sociality, and in some ways a precursor of the better society that we are trying to make. Progressive. Alternatively, however, the other way of understanding Lawson's dictum is that beer is something that gets in the way of the kind of society that we want to make. So instead of building a better society, we drink ourselves stupid instead. So I don't mean to settle that question for you, but I would suggest that in this book we have a huge variety of authors tackling that question, and it's of more than historic interest. It's not simply that alcohol still plays a very important role in Australian life, but similar arguments can be made about the role of drugs, but also, say, the role of religion and the role of sport. In all of those issues, the same kinds of questions emerge, and I think this book, it's full of funny stories, it's full of humorous anecdotes, but it's also a serious resource people who are trying to tackle all those questions. So that's about all I want to say. I would just finish by suggesting that unlike the beer in Ton Man's pub, this book is not watered down. It's not adulterated. It is full strength radicalism. You're not going to be cheated if you buy it. It's full of high potency content. So buy a copy for yourself and shout one to one of your comrades. Thanks.